Tech Effect. Welcome to Tech Effect, a monthly podcast series brought to you by Tesnolab. I'm Adrian, the host of the podcast, and together with industry experts, we provide discussions and advanced insights about trending topics in software engineering. Don't miss out on new episodes, and let's keep advancing our skills and knowledge set. In this
particular episode, we explore the future of the OpenAI and its impact on the field of artificial intelligence. We will discuss the development of the new AI solutions and the recent call for the pause in training more powerful AI systems. We'll also delve into the potential regulations and challenges in AI development. Today, joining us, we have Matty Roy and also Annette Dowling. Matty, introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm working at OpenAI. I'm a project manager on the human data team, and I've been interested in the potential long-term impact of AI for about 10 years.
Okay, and Annette?
Hi, everyone. I'm Annette Dowling, and I'm a machine learning engineer here at Tesla Lab. And I've been working in machine learning engineering, like the kind of area, for, I would say, 5 years or so. So
my first question to Matt, how and why did you decide to work in the software engineering field? How did you end up here?
Well, if we go back like all the way, I'll just like explain the journey.
Yeah.
I like to keep track of like why I'm where I am and what's all the moving part that made me like arrive here. And when I was young, I was like really afraid of death. And then when I became an adult, I discovered this community or philosophy called transhumanism of people that were hoping to that humanity could solve all its problems through technology. And then I was interested in learning more about the human brain and how we reason. And someone introduced me to Les Wrong. So I started reading on Les Wrong. Les Wrong is like a blog on human rationality, but it also discusses a broad range of topics, notably AI. And then I discovered like the risk of AI, what AI could bring, but also like its potential for negative impact as well. And then I started thinking like, yeah, that's like one of the most important topic currently, like and it was really neglected when I started looking into it. So yeah, I started getting involved like in reading a lot about that. And then I initially started working at UT, which is a small nonprofit working on AI safety related topics. And then I was collaborating with OpenAI when I was there. And then that's how I got into OpenAI.
And did you previously work in a software engineering field as well?
I self-learned. I went to university. I decided to learn physics engineering because I had the broad range of interests and I wasn't sure yet what I wanted. I wanted to specialize, and that was covering a broad range of topics. And then I self-learned programming, and I work as a software engineer. And that knowledge is really helpful because I'm like a technical project manager at OpenAI. So programming is like not my main thing, but I do use this as a tool often in my work.
So you use programming to boost your capabilities as project manager, right?
Yeah, and then after the programming, I had like a full-time programmer for like 2 years. Then I stopped working as a programmer. I was taking care of a local effective altruism community in Montreal, and then I transitioned to the role that I am doing right now.
Okay, that sounds quite interesting. And how about you, Annette? How can you share maybe your journey to working at a Tesla Lab?
My journey is actually kind of like long, but I will try to keep it short and sweet.
Squeeze it.
I went to actually very, really small school in Latvia, and I was actually really lucky to have an opportunity to take a programming course at high school. And what influenced me the most to pursue programming as my career was actually my brother, who's also computer engineering. So eventually I thought, well, if he can do it, why can't I? So I kind of did that. So I applied to study automation and computer engineering. And during my bachelor's, I was really passionate about social robotics and artificial intelligence. So I kind of started learning more about that in my free time. And I actually met a fellow female student who was also interested in the same things. So, yeah, together we ended up working in EU-funded projects, which later on led that, I decided to pursue a master's degree in the same area, same kind of study. And we were actually only two people out of 15 who graduated that program and got master's degree. And then, during my time at university, I kind of developed passion for machine learning and computer vision. And then later on, I was offered a job at TestDev Lab, which offered me opportunity to involve both and worked in research and development team. So here I am, and my journey is still ongoing. So
before I ask my first question, do you know what is the most actual thing and the buzz about an OpenAI thing?
A buzz about the OpenAI thing.
In Reddit, at least the one I read it, you know, the first thing that people always ask is OpenAI already developed?
Right.
GPT-5?
Yeah. That's the one. Like I saw also like some. Like OpenAI is kind of siloed in some ways. Like I'm not aware of all the development that's going on inside OpenAI, and I learn about things through the news. There's been like apparently a leak. I don't know if it's true about some recent a new development at OpenAI, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. GPT-5, like Sam Altman says that. We're not going to work on this for now. Like you said that publicly, but we're improving GPT-4 like in many ways. I guess what has been counting as like incrementing the number by one is when we train a new model. But I feel like it's a little bit arbitrary, like what's GPT-4.5 or 5, like, we're improving like GPT-4 in many ways, but I think right now a lot of the work that needs to be done is like integrating the technology in many tools that we have right now. So I think that's that it makes sense to focus on that, and even like the GPT, like GPT that can read images, that's very compute intensive, and that's why it hasn't been rolled out yet more broadly, because there needs to be like more hardware development, and NVIDIA like needs to produce more chips. So I think like that's been slowing down a little bit what we could do.
So basically, you have really like high security between teams, and you do not talk to each other, so you don't expose some of the information that's what's going on, going to be about new development things and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Annette, maybe you have some questions about it.
Yeah, like, you know, during COVID, there was this big buzz about blockchain, and it got a lot of media coverage. And this year, I feel like it's just ChatGPT everywhere. Like, you go online, it's ChatGPT here, ChatGPT there. Like, what is your outlook on that? Like, do you think AI chatbots will be around in 5 years? It's still going to be a big thing? Or, I don't know, in 5 years, there will be better technology that will replace it? Or, you know, are kind of like attention's going to move towards something else and not chatbots?
Like, in the past years, I've been pretty confident that AI will be a big thing at some point if we don't go extinct. Like, it will be a major transition. But I've always been less confident about the details, like when it was going to happen or how fast it was going to happen, like how risky it was going to be. Like, those details, they are very complex and there's like many possibilities. So I'm kind of surprised like how fast AI has developed. Like I knew AI at some point would be like, we would reach AGI probably. But yeah, I'm surprised how fast it's been going. And it's something that I've been very interested in for a while. And it's really weird to see like not everyone is interested in this, because when I was interested in this at first, it was really niche. And people were not taking like existential risk from AI seriously, or that, just that we would have powerful AIs. People were like, yeah, sure, like maybe in the future. People were saying like, oh, it seems like a religion. It seems like you're in a religion. Like, and I'm like, yeah, we're like a religion. We're a religion that makes stuff happen. Like, you know, other religions don't make things happen. Like, yeah.
But yeah, regarding that, there's interest. Actually, is really, really spot regarding the AI. That's true, especially the OpenAI, just ChatGPT itself. And in Reddit, there was also one of the things, well, not only Reddit, but actually when I Googled about the OpenAI, there's Sam Altman. He expressed concern about the risks of AI. And he said that there are needs to be a six-month pause in training AI systems that are more powerful than ChatGPT. How do you think, what are your thoughts on this? Are we really like so far with development of AI that we need actually like half year pause?
Yeah, I don't know if you said that Sam Altman said that, but I don't think he said that, right? But yeah, the Future of Life Institute, they had a letter where a lot of people signed it. I'm very conflicted about like whether we should pause. Like I think if we were able to pause like worldwide for many years. And then focus on better understanding how those systems work and how to make them safe. That seems like it would be very valuable. But if we are pausing it for 6 months, like it could be valuable, but there for that same reason. But there could also be downsides. Like other organizations could catch up with the leaders. Like, and I think I think OpenAI is a really safety conscious compared to like all the other organizations that would be catching up with OpenAI. And I would prefer to also avoid a lot of competition. And like people will usually protest, like, yeah, I agree, competition is like super useful usually to develop better products. But if we have a lot of competition in AI, it will favor the players that are the most reckless and like that cut the most corners to develop their technology. And I think, yeah, and I think that could be dangerous. So, and the other reason I'm like, maybe we should not pause is like, if we can see hardware will still improve even if we pause AI development. It won't be developed as fast, but it will continue to be developed. And then once we start experimenting with AI again, we're gonna deal with much stronger AI right away. Like, so that's another argument for keep developing it. But I'm really conflicted. Like I see both good reasons to pausing or not pausing it.
I actually wanted to ask you regarding this. But do you think, like you know, all these? I know there's now EU AI Act and similar potential regulations. Like, do you think it will make like this harder to develop these AI models and new features? What it will actually kind of help everyone in some way to kind of be in the keep things in the same playground and not go overboard about it. Like, do you think it's actually beneficial or?
Yeah, it seems to me like the current regulation being discussed, that seems very useful to me. Maybe it's gonna, yeah, like. And I hope like other countries join, all the countries, the major players join in. Like it's really a collaborative effort. If only the EU self-regulate and the other country, like the US and China don't, then it's not really gonna. Well, it's still gonna be helpful because companies operate globally. But I think
does that mean that these companies that will not be in the UA will have more possibilities to advance than if they will create a company in the UA and do an AI?
Yeah, I'm concerned about that, but I strongly encourage like being the first, like, let's just do it first, and then let's like invite the other countries for reciprocating, and then like gradually increase the amount of policies that we have. I think it's like we need that for the survival of humanity, so long term, and also for short term, like for the shorter term arms as well. So there's not really a choice, I think.
That makes sense. But also, like, do you think it's it should be kind of like all developers, like for example machine learning engineers, should be under these laws to make sure that everything is, like, you know, being done correctly? Or should the companies just enforce that, or the scientists? And
well, like I guess there are questions that we need to answer, like, what there's, like, you could oversee all the AI is developed, or you could just oversee the outcome of AI. What if it, like, an AI system caused harm? Who's responsible? Is it the company that developed the AI? Is it the person that used the AI? Is it, like, the AI itself? Like, probably not. But I think it would make more sense to hold that accountable the big corporation that are the company developing the AIs. Not in all ways, but, like, if the AI generated an output that it wasn't supposed to, that was reckless and dangerous to generate, I think the company developing the AI, not the company using the AI, should be held responsible in general, because they have the most resources, and it's really important for them, like, versus like just an individual or a small company using the AI. And I think they're the one that will be able to address those issues.
I was just thinking, well, with all that AI advancements and stuff like that, how likely do you think that some of the jobs will probably vanish? In how long period of time do you think that could be?
I mean, I think that's already happening. Like,
in my opinion, for some, like, jobs, it actually helps to boost your potential, right?
Yeah, like, some man like makes a comparison with electricity. When electricity gets cheaper, people actually have been spending more on electricity historically. Like, there's a higher need. So maybe if programmers become cheaper, then that people want to pay even more programming, like, because there's a bunch of tools that haven't been developed yet. I think that's like what that's possible. It's possible, like, but like, that's just going to be temporary. Eventually, AI will replace everyone, unless, like, we somehow figure out how to merge with AI. But short term, I think, like, in the next few years, I think there's going to be, like, major disruption, and there's going to be a lot of people that will need to find new job probably over the coming decade. Yeah.
Have you heard about the universal basic income?
Yeah.
So do you think that could be a potential solution if there's a lot of job loss people?
Yeah, I'm really, like, unsure about it. Like, I think it's important that the wealth generated by AI be at least part of it be, like, redistributed to the world. And I really like that OpenAI says limits its profit, and then everything else goes to the nonprofit. But instead of giving the money to the people and then, like, taxing it to, like, fund common goods, I think it might be useful to use a lot of that money to fund common goods directly, like that things that would benefit everyone, like research DCs, for example. So instead of giving money to people, maybe you use that money to, like, research DCs or research other things that would benefit everyone. Of course, like, if people can't, like, afford basic living, that's a problem. Like, that should be addressed first. I think we already have safety nets for that. But at some point, if, like, a major part of the population can't work, then universal basic income, I think, yeah, we need that. Like, we need people to be able to live, like, comfortably without if they can't work, like, and we have, as a civilization, we have all this wealth, like, yeah, of course they should have access to part of that wealth.
Yeah, like, from my perspective, I would say that AI will definitely be taking some jobs away, but also it creates jobs. Like, I'm a machine learning engineer, I wouldn't be able to work as that if, you know, there was no need for that. So I would say it also like creates opportunities. It's just depending on the situation.
Yeah, if people can grasp really quick the new tech, what AI offers, and not knew how to use it and structure it really well, they can teach people how to actually use the AI.
It's like the car, like we're pushing on the car and it makes sense. Yeah. If you have something that's like, I don't know if the right analogy, but yeah, you're pushing on a car to make it go faster. Yeah. You can push on the car to make it go faster. Like if it's not going fast, but at some point the car is going so fast that you can't even run as fast to like keep pushing it. I think it's the same with AI. Yeah. AI is not going fast enough right now. You can like push it so that it goes faster. But I think at some point AI will go so fast, we won't even be able to like keep up to help it.
It is either we jump in or we stay behind.
Yeah. Again, like maybe we merge with AI and then like some, I don't know what happens at this point. But it's like with like horses, let's say. Horses used to be driving us places. And now they're out of job, like, you know, the population crashed like dramatically. There's like way, way less horses than they used to just because cars replaced them. And I think in AI, we're developing a brain, like, which is what allows us to do all the jobs that we do. And I think the same will happen to us.
Can you maybe, like, one thing that came to my mind, maybe you can like provide an overview of the potential upcoming features or plugins that OpenAI is currently working on, if you can? That
would be. Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is like in beta or alpha, and some people have access to it. And yeah, like one that we were hoping to release earlier, which when we released GPT-4, like was mentioned, is being able to process images. So you can ask queries and also include like a bunch of images. There's also a code interpreter. Like there's been videos made on this in the last couple of weeks online, where you can submit like a large variety of data and ask information. Like you can send a CSV file and ask it to make graphs or like play with the data. And I've already started using it. It's like the AI connecting all the AIs together. Like, so if you want to text to image or text to voice or text to a video, AI, I think in many ways will become an interface between us and the other products. So like, if you want to access Amazon, maybe you just ask GPT instead of, this is not a plugin that exists as far as I know, but like there's a plugin for Instacart, for example. So you can say that you want to make a vegan recipe, and then once you find like recipes that you like, you can ask the AI to add all the items that you need in your cart.
Is there maybe any other like features or plugins that can enhance the productivity efficiency?
Like I've been starting to use Vowel, the AI, which I don't know if they use GPT. Like they might not. I don't know. But they definitely use a large language model, and I really I've been recording my life like for multiple years, and like now that we're at the point where I whisper like and transcribe everything that I've said like perfectly, and then I can ask AI to search like this information. That's so powerful. Like I'm not doing all my calls on Vowel.ai because it gets a transcript, and it gets the to-do list. Like as I talk, it suggests items to add to my to-do list, and I can ask a question to like summarize what has been said so far. Like if someone joined the calls late, they can ask like what has been a short summary of what has been said so far, and we can interact with this transcript in real time. And I think, yeah, I'm really looking forward to like developing this more. Like maybe the AI, like if there's a conflict in the call, like the AI could suggest like ways to address the conflict, it could be like a third person in the conversation that augments our conversations. So yeah, I'm really excited about those features, those like tools being developed.
Yeah, so you've been recording all your life, and now they've been these AI models that basically people make of themselves just from the recordings. Have you ever considered doing something like that? Or maybe you are kind of, aren't you a bit scared that someone might do that using your videos and everything?
So ultimately, like, the main reason I was recording my life was that if I was to die, then I would have collected. That's the only thing that's like cannot be reversed is collecting information. Everything else I feel like can be reversed with through enough engineering is just like putting back that information together. So that's what I've been doing. Like, I'm signing up for Crinix for the same reason. Like, I'm just collecting information. And if something happens to me, and something is already happening to me, I am forgetting like things all the time because our brain is like has a limited amount of energy and space that it can use. So I'm already like dying like every day, part of me. And I don't want this to happen. So I'm collecting this information to be able to like use in the future. Maybe if I decide that I want to reintegrate it in my brain somehow or something like that. I don't know if it's silly, but I'm a little bit afraid of doing it wrong. Like, what if like I create a kind of a copy of myself, but their experience is like really weird, and we don't care about their AI, so we don't care about their like experience, and like we just like use them as slaves, and now like there's a bunch of digital copies of me that I value as much as I value myself that are being exploited. Like, I'm kind of afraid of that. But I'm afraid like what it's like to be a digital mind right now. Probably, I don't know, like probably nothing, but I really don't know. Like, I'm but if we remove that concern, it's interesting to me that people would be able to talk to a digital version of myself so I can augment myself. And
yeah, no, to yeah, me, because I've seen all these stories, you know, people take other people's voice and kind of make these phone calls and everything. And, you know, if you record all your life and they have access, like, you know, access to all this information about you, like personal stuff, it could be a bit scary. Because even for me, I'm very cautious what I put online. Because, you know, all the information, if it goes to wrong hands, I was just kind of curious.
Yeah.
What's your outlook on this?
Information is the most valuable thing we have, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what's going to happen, like, when we get this tech accessible. Like, will people start... Some people will probably start recording themselves more. Although AI is pretty good at, like, working with only a few information. Like, 11 Labs is replicating my voice with a five-minute audio clip. Like, maybe other people will try to, like, become dark on the web if it's not too late. And well, the information...
Maybe a lot of more people will think of what should be posted to the internet and what should not be.
Yeah, we're going to create the idealized version of their digital self will be like what they want the world to know about them, I guess.
Imagine if we go back to like phones that don't have internet access and anything, and just you can just make phone calls like without touch screen, without anything, just because of the AI development.
I hope it's not going to happen.
What do you mean?
Like back in the 80s or 70s, you know, where there's no phones because everyone's going dark because of the AI.
Yeah. One thing I was thinking is like, okay, people used to play poker in person. Then we got the internet. People started playing poker online. And then we have AIs that like will beat you at poker and you'll lose your money. Like, I mean, I don't know what's happening right now in terms of poker, but if it's not happening already, I feel like, yeah, poker will become, unless you're able to really authenticate, like that's, it's a human playing. Like, yeah, you won't be able to play poker online anymore. And yeah, then we're back to like...
Back to basics, exactly. They're going to go back to playing poker on...
I feel like because of these new advancements in AI and it becoming more powerful, we will actually need better, I know, cybersecurity. And we will actually have to invest a lot of research towards, towards all that so that, you know, AI can be used in a bad way to harm others. So I think that's actually one thing that might be very popular in the future.
Yeah, I think Sam Altman, like WorldCoin's nonprofit, is working on the ice sensor that would be his vision for their main way of authenticating people, so to make sure they're humans.
I was thinking, well, While developing all these new features, you know, how much actual software testing is involved? And what's the collaboration like between the developer and the testing engineer?
Yeah, there's, it's very layered. Like, I'm not aware of the full pipeline, but there's like internal tests, and then there's red teams from like other nonprofit that we give access, early access to our model. Like, that's what we did for GPT-4. Like, I think it lasted for over 6 months before we released it, between the point of having created it. And then there's like release it alpha mode, where like you're just gradually releasing it to, and monitoring like, oh, it's being used, what's happening, and making the fix that needs to be made. And yeah, so if at any point in the pipeline like a malicious use is found, like then it can be addressed before it's released more.
Are there maybe any like specific challenges that OpenAI has encountered during these type of developments of these upcoming features and products?
Problems, I guess, with like, you know, generating false information. But that's like some people, I heard like some people say like, oh, OpenAI did not predict that this would happen, that people would jailbreak GPT. I'm like, I can't say for sure. I can talk for people at everyone at OpenAI, but like, no. And I'm pretty sure like people at OpenAI, like we knew like that we play with we jailbreak OpenGPT all the time ourselves. Like it wasn't like a big surprising news that like people were jailbreaking ChatGPT.
So when it was released, you already knew that it could and it will be potentially jailbreaked.
I mean, I can talk for other people at OpenAI, but like, yeah, that was pretty. That wasn't surprising at all to me. Like, yeah, that was my prediction. Yeah. And useful like information to be able to develop our model safer, so that when we get stronger AIs, then we've already had this problem and a lot of data to address it. Yeah, that's all we can address it is just by releasing it early. If we wait, I don't think, and like there are disclaimers everywhere. People, I mean, I could be in a bubble, and that's not the case. But I feel like people do know that generative AI will generate things that are false sometimes, and to take it into context of like they are trying to jailbreak it on purpose. Like they know what they want. They're like consent to what the AI is generating.
I actually was thinking regarding the ChatGPT. You know, when I asked one question, but in different ways, it gives a totally different answer. And the thing is that, I mean, the idea is to use it as a prompt. Like if you write more consistent, like short and very precise question, it will give you more accurate answer. But if you kind of like, I don't know, ask a question like a regular user, so then yeah, it kind of gives this false information, but with such a big confidence, like you read it and it's like, wow. But like, because even some kind of questions, like even machine learning, where I'm very knowledgeable of, I and sometimes it gives me such an answer, and sometimes I think, but this sounds so confident, you know, like it makes you kind of think. And so my question is like, is maybe like, is OpenAI doing something kind of like where they, I don't know, process the fake information, fake news, how they kind of for their data sets, like if they kind of, I don't know, do some kind of checkups so they don't train the ChatGPT on fake news websites and stuff like that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'm not like I can't say for the. I mean, that seems like they probably do that, but I'm not involved in like which data is initially fed to the model to train them. What I'm involved with the team that gives human feedback to the AI, and we do this with my team. Like, we present. We have like a team of trainers that are there to teach the AI how to respond, and we have. And the AI presents like multiple answers that it's thinking are likely to be true or useful and armless. Like those are the three main things that we care about, like armless, truthful, and useful. and the trainer like identifies if the information fits those criteria so that they I can learn to from that feedback.
Oh, okay. But also regarding that, the reinforcement learning, the stage where you retrain it, I've read some articles regarding, you know, how it tries to go malicious ways. Like if you ask it, you know, in a tricky way, it also does it. So, and then in reinforcement learning, using reinforcement learning, you kind of stop it so that it, you know, doesn't do that in the, you know, when you release it to the general public. But, you know, my concerns are, you know, you can't, you can't guess, you know, you can't know all these kind of use cases where it might go bad or it might give fault, like, you know, act bad way. So your outlook, how can you like ensure that, you know, most of the typical malicious use cases don't go further?
Yeah, I don't know how well it will generalize like and be able to understand from human feedback like versus like I don't know how much that was their problem over time. One thing I was thinking, it's not related to OpenAI, but I was thinking like, oh, maybe we could train another model that tries to predict the probability that an output is should be flagged or should be I don't know, that's primary thoughts, but like maybe we can even have a marketplace of like AIs that try to identify outputs that are malicious and then have them taxed in some way, and then the company that like detected it gets a reward. And I don't know, but I feel like they're that will need to be, I don't know if it will generalize or we will need to have like some qualitative innovation, like something new, or if just more human feedback at some point will generalize. I don't know.
Can reinforcement learning in ChatGPT improve maybe over time if more user interacts with it? If so, how is it possible?
Yeah, I don't know, like, I know there's like thumbs up and thumbs down buttons on the ChatGPT interface. So that might be used as feedback. I don't know, but I do know like some clients opt in having their data used, and that's simply used to train the AI.
Also, like about like reinforcement learning, you know, you said you have thumbs up, thumbs down, and you kind of like evaluate, you know, if it's truthful or not. But the thing is, like, there's a lot about reinforcement learning in ChatGPT, but there's less information about how it's being trained, on what data specifically, that's not being really said. And for me, like, you know, as a machine learning engineer, like, for me, you know, everything depends on the data you trained it on. So how can we as a public be sure that it's not really biased in some cases, because like, you know, as I say, what you put into the model, that's what you getting out of it. So how can we as a public be sure, yeah, that, you know, what they're doing is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was reading about the Center for AI Safety, who were like reviewing some policies that might be helpful. And that was one of the main three they were suggesting that could be both helpful for shorter term risk as well as long-term risk was more visibility into the data that's being fed into the AI. I'm not sure like what would be the specific of a policy that would address that, but that makes sense to me what you're saying.
Yeah, because like nobody, like everyone kind of keeps it, you know, hidden. And I mean, I get it for the training reasons, you know, you don't want to put your data public because then, you know, competitors can use the same data set and they can even maybe get better results. So I know why, you know, the companies don't want to disclose it, but I think for general public, maybe, you know.
On one end, like I don't want to increase competition in AI because for the reasons I mentioned earlier. So that would be like a cost to me to have this, but But maybe the benefits are higher than the cost. I don't know.
You know, developing these large language models, it's really pricey. It costs a lot, not just, you know, money-wise, but also, you know, energy and the computing power. And I don't think that, you know, many small companies can actually jump in and, you know, compete with the big players like OpenAI or Meta.
I don't know. I hope that's the case. It might be true, but like I've seen like a University of Stanford, for example, just using our GPT API to reproduce, and they were using like a weaker model from Facebook that had been leaked, and they trained it with the OpenAI API, and they were able to get like, according to their own paper, I haven't verified this information, but they were able to get an AI that was pretty much as good as GPT itself, and they just use like $600 of API queries to train it. So Google is also saying that Google is saying like we can't protect the tech, like it's really hard to protect the tech. I don't know if they're right. Like maybe all the infrastructure that OpenAI is creating, like all the plugins and the API and all of that will be sufficient to protect the tech. But it's not obvious to me. It seems like pretty easy to copy and hard to protect.
How far would you say is OpenAI with the development of superintelligence?
Yeah, I used to have long timelines. Like I was like, yeah, it's going to take decades or more. Now I'm like, oh man, I wouldn't be that surprised if it was this decade. Like all the big tech CEOs, most of the big tech CEOs, I feel like, were closeted, like TransMedis, and they were like, yeah, we have this goal, but now like everyone is like public about it. Like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Sam Altman, they're all saying like we're gonna get AGI within 10 years. And some of the extrapolation I've seen, like, yeah, they have it within 20 years. And at some point you get also a feedback loop of using AI to develop AI. So for me, 10, 20 years, like that I wouldn't be surprised if that happened within
but
that frame.
From your perspective, do you think it's actually needed? Because, like, you know, there are some AIs for specific use case. You know, there are multiple different areas that have been already, you know, are being already used. And there's no, you know, there's no problems with that, you know, using different AI for each task. And do we really need that super intelligence? What is your outlook on this?
I think ideally we should, like, I mean, I would prefer if we just take a pause and like figure out what's up with superintelligence and like what's gonna happen, like how to make it safely, like but it seems really hard to stop it, and I'm not saying we shouldn't try. Like maybe there are ways that are worth trying and that would work. But if I just myself say like, oh, I mean, some people think it's useful even as individuals. But maybe we shouldn't do it. Yeah, but it's probably still going to happen though.
Do you think with all this technology advancements in AI, can it somehow help with lie detection?
I'm thinking like... I've already seen like some recent studies like using large language model helping with things like lie detection and mind reading, and I think it will also help with cross referencing like a lot of information, and like an idea that I've been playing with in my mind for a while, like I don't know how realistic it is, but would be to use this on people running like the big AI companies, because they could have a lot of power, and they could. It doesn't seem implausible to me that they would basically. They could like decide where the future of humanity like goes, like indefinitely into the future. Interviewing which god we want, or which people we're gonna elect as having this power. Like that seems like something that could be really beneficial. And
Yeah. So, you know, Jeff Bezos started selling books online, and now he's sending rockets into space. And Facebook started out as a social network platform primarily for Harvard University students, and now they even have their own Meta AI research division. Like, in what ways do you think ChatGPT will change to increase the market share and keep the investors happy? Because eventually, you know, everything changes.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, it seems to me like it will always be related to AI, like, but that's so broad. It's like, yeah.
But currently it's like just like a chatbot. I just said that. But like, so what direction are they going?
Like OpenAI has invested in a bunch of companies. Like they have, I don't remember, I think over $100 million of an investment fund where they invest in a bunch of startups, mostly AI startups. One of them is working on creating humanoid robots. So, I mean, and I know Tesla is also working on that. So like that might be a space where I don't know if OpenAI will like eventually like buy out some of those startups or they would just collaborate with them, but that they have their hands on like some of those things. I wonder, like, this is not related to, I'm not really talking on behalf of OpenAI, and I don't know, like, but I don't know what they're doing in that regard. But if it turns out that AI is tech is art to protect, like everyone can copy your AI pretty easily, I'm thinking like it could be that to stay competitive, you need to keep the AI to yourself and develop more things internally. I don't know. I don't assign like personally high priority to this, but it's something that
so kind of develop something for yourself and just not tell anyone that you have it. Yeah.
I mean, maybe you use your AI. Maybe you tell people like, yeah, we have an AI doing R&D and anti-aging research, and then you commercialize like the AI's findings, but you don't commercialize the AI itself.
Okay, that would actually be an interesting approach, I would say. Because yeah, since, you know, OpenAI started promoting ChatGPT so much, suddenly everyone kind of went in on it.
But yes, Sam Altman is saying that they won't develop other AI application because with the GPT API, because other companies were afraid that OpenAI would compete with them. And Sam Altman said like, yeah, we're only going to develop ChatGPT. All the other use cases, like we're not going to compete with you. And you, so yeah, they're still gonna make it available through the API. But I think ChatGPT could like, it's pretty general purpose. So it's like.
No, I feel like a lot of issues about it is that people don't really understand it yet. Like, let's just say about these writer jobs now in Hollywood and everywhere else, like they're like, oh, AI can do this already. Why wouldn't we pay you this much? But when you actually use the AI for the job, it's not really good, like at all. Like it's so new, so you can't really, like, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, we for a lot of those things, we totally need the humans to just work with AI. Like when I'm programming, like, you know, I'm using GitHub Copilot. That's really helpful. Like, I'm like mind blown sometimes. Like, holy shit. It knew that I was going to write this, but I still need to like do all the heavy lifting.
I mean, it's just like a really helpful tool. Like even for the writers, they can get some ideas for, you know, their work from it, but it doesn't mean that, you know, their jobs will be taken away, like, you know, at the end of this month or so. So I think that, yeah, so I feel like, you know, because of the media outlook on everything, I feel like there's just like, kind of this false image about this. Because like, I feel like even ChatGPT is like still in its early stages. It still has a lot to, you know, be, you know, improved in different areas, and it still needs to be retrained multiple times, and it needs newer data and everything. But it's just that because of the all this media outlook, it kind of it's made like this big bad thing that will, I don't know, destroy the world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, yeah, no, GPT-4 is not going to destroy the world, obviously. Like, GPT-8, maybe, I don't know.
GPT is like little Santa's helper, you know? You can give him any task. It's like little Santa's helper. Like ChatGPT helps you out with little tasks. And if you know how to take them and how to assess them correctly, you can get the perfect outcome. Okay, so we've been talking for already 1 hour, right? And so for not keep, let's not keep it quite longer. But one question still from me. So as we now know, OpenAI has a lot of different upcoming features and it already has plugins and stuff like that and other type of products. How can it support educational initiatives or online learning
platforms? I've seen like companies, learning companies use GPT for this purpose already. Like I want to use it to improve my accent because it bothers me that I still have like such a thick French accent. And I've seen some tools like, I don't think that one specifically. I've seen a plugin actually on ChatGPT. I haven't tried it yet. And like personalized tutors. I've tried to use it as a personal tutor, and I was asking it a question and I said, like, if I'm getting it right, ask me harder questions. When I'm getting it wrong, like, ask me easier question. it was kind of good. Like, so it's going to allow for more customized learning.
I think we can wrap this up, right? So thank you everyone for joining us on this particular episode as we explored a little bit the future of OpenAI and its impact on the AI landscape, right? I hope that everyone who listened to this gained valuable insights. And just follow us on Spotify or YouTube for more thought-provoking discussions on the latest tech trends. And if you have any suggestions or feedback or you want to ask any questions to us or Matty, just connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Reach out under the name of Tech Effect and then just stay tuned for our next episode. And we will still continue to uncover the ever-evolving world of technology. So, thank you, Matty. Thank you,
Anna. Thank you for having us.